when you studied a little bit about Harry Potter.
I felt something else come into me, and
magic is deception. Magic is all lies.
And was labeled by many as the father of Satanism. He was the founder of the Church of Satan.
Or even a person who goes and asks someone to do magic for them. This takes you out of Islam.
He is considered as the most notorious satanic magician of the 20th century.
Have you ever accompanied one of these Rakis? Have you ever witnessed something? Do you have any...
I've been involved in the Rakia myself.
You have? Can you share can you share with us a jinn story?
I sold my soul for you. Now figure that out.
And I think he got possessed. They found out in the end he got possessed by...
Or black magic is based on the worship of Satan and neglecting the worship of God.
What do you say for our agnostic atheist friends when they hear this? They say, oh, well, that's the reason I don't follow any religion. But at the same time, you know, these are the people who are really the most into aliens and UFOs and stuff like that.
Magically written, made a bargain, the chief commander.
On this earth?
And in this earth, and then in a world we can't see.
It's so great to be on the Dean Show.
This is the Dean Show.
Welcome back to the Dean Show. And I have this week's special guest, Sheikh Abdulrahim Green. How are you, Sheikh?
Alhamdulillah, I'm very well, Eddie. How you doing, man?
I'm good, alhamdulillah. How are things on your part of the world over there?
You know, summer's coming, the sun's out. It's nice, bro. You know, life is looking up. We hope the lockdown's going to end. So, you know, inshallah, you know.
We see you here and there getting out, you know, enjoying the nice ambiance there. You got the mountains, doing some hiking, drinking some coffee.
Well, right now I'm at some mountain biking trails with my boys, and usually I get a signal here, but I was at the top of the hill and like there was no signal, so I just nipped in the car and drove down a little bit, and now I've got signal. So yeah, it's all good now, alhamdulillah. My plan was to you know, sit in the car and do the show and the boys just sort of mess around, but yeah, one of them's going to go off now, so.
Now, we've heard you make the connection between where you got Harry Potter, magic, yeah, and Dajjal. And many don't know, you spent some time studying this topic. What was the goal of that?
I did, and I still have the book. It's called The Magical Arts. I still have that book somewhere in my library. And a few other books I had. So basically, like a lot of people who are on spiritual journeys, they go through the whole of the new age spirituality thing, right? So yoga, psychosomatic yoga, chakras, psychic energy, you know, all of that type of stuff. And you know, that eventually it's going to lead you looking into magic. Now, it's sort of ironic that, in fact, it actually gave me the first sort of glimpses of Tawheed. Now, that may sound weird. However, if you understand that a very important part of Western magic is the Kabbalah, right? So this is actually a Jewish book of magic. But it has influenced Western magical lore quite strongly, the Kabbalah. And the Kabbalah actually has some, you know, some clear things about Tawheed in it, right? Because obviously it's rooted, some of it, in the Torah. Of course, we believe there's a lot of corruption there and a lot of deviation and a lot of misguidance, right? But some of the things it was saying, it was like, okay, that sounds more like the sort of God that I believe in, because I was really struggling with this Christian notion of God sitting on a cloud, you know, reaching out his finger and touching Adam, you know, like Michelangelo style, you know, Sistine Chapel in the Vatican, you know, that famous picture, so-called, of God with a gray beard sitting there stark naked, mm-hmm, and Adam, you know, reaching out with his finger. I really struggle with that. I just couldn't understand, you know, this surely wasn't God, right? It's not the God I believed in. I just couldn't believe that the creator of the whole universe was some old man sitting on a cloud. So I guess that's part of the reason as well why I started just looking through all sorts of things. You know, another thing that impacted me, funnily enough, was Star Wars, right? Because Star Wars talked about the Force, you know, mm-hmm, may the Force be with you. And again, the idea that there was this force, that there was some force in the universe, you know, it made more sense to me than the, you know, this Christian anthropomorphic idea of God. So I don't know. All of these things were sort of, I guess in a way, some of them were appealing to my fitra, you know, my natural disposition. Because we believe, Eddie, as you know, that every human being is created with a natural inclination or a natural disposition to worship God alone. And it's only their environment that takes them away from that basic fundamental nature. This nature surfaces every now and then, right? So, you know, for example, you know, when you are like, you know, like the Quran gives an example of a man in a boat and there's a storm in the sea and, you know, the people think they're going to drown and then they call upon God. And all the things that they used to worship and they used to put their trust in, their money and their trade and their idols, and they forget it all. And it's like, God save me, God help me. So this tawheed, this natural belief in the oneness of God emerges at those times.
What do you think about when you studied a little bit about Harry Potter, and it's innocent enough, people think that you actually find it in some Islamic school libraries. Have you heard of that?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know that, but to be honest, Rowling, I can't remember her name, A.K. Rowling, right? I've heard some interviews with her. Like, first of all, when I started reading, I only read the first two books. I read the first two books of Harry Potter myself, right? And I just found it, like, to be honest, I was really bored, yeah? However, I found it really boring, right? And a bit repetitive. But, you know, people told me, oh, the books got better further on. But, you know, I just gave up. And to be honest, I don't have time for it, right? But one of my sons really liked it. He read it all. I remember, I think I got him the last book. I got him one of the first copies that came out, you know, on day one or something. So, but you see, the thing is, bro, I don't like generally with my kids, I don't keep them away from stuff like that. But I use it as a platform to explain things to them. So. So because I understand, like, there is no doubt that J.K. Rowling had studied magic thoroughly. The stuff in there is like, if you know magic, you know that a lot of the things are either directly taken from actual magic lore, or they are, you know, like a little bit borrowed, and she mixes up a bit of this and a bit of that and changes her name here. But it's not just magic as well. The whole, I mean, which is, I'm still fascinated by it. The whole mythology of ancient Britain, right? And not just ancient Britain, but mostly like ancient Europe. It has all these legends and these mythologies and, you know, tales of these like spirits and ghosts and, you know, gods and creatures and stuff. So there's a lot of that mixed in it as well. There's also stuff taken from, you know, stuff that's probably actually genuine. So like herbology, for example, the whole study of herbs, like before there was the allopathic medicine, everything was herbs, right? So this whole thing of herbs, like medicine and magic, were actually quite mixed up, right? So not everything from it was actually necessarily bad. Some of it was like, was actually good stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Which makes it even more confusing, right? So yeah, having studied magic, having looked into it, and then having read Harry Potter, no doubt at all that, and she's admitted it, right? She talks about the books she's read, and they are, you know, books of magical lore. You know, lore is in L-O-R-E, not lore is in, you know, the law of the land type lore. Yeah. Lore means sort of like legends, and it's not just legends, right? I suppose it's equivalent of a type of magical Sharia, I suppose. And a lot of this, Eddie, is based on, like, you look, if you read Harry Potter, even in Harry Potter, although, like, she will paint, you know, Harry Potter and Jemima or whatever, I can't remember their names, right, as like sort of good guys against the evil Voldemort, he whose name shall not be mentioned, right? But in reality, they're all part of the same spectrum. Because even when Harry and Hermione are doing spells, those spells and the potions they make are full of filth. They are full of najis. They contain every single, like, filthy thing, right? So, you know, blood and frogs and, you know, things that are haram, that are forbidden, you know, various plants that are basically poisonous, right? And these incantations, many of them obviously contain words of disbelief. And all of, so that from that perspective, right, this is when the shayateen, when the devils, right, will cooperate with you. They will cooperate with you and they will help you do evil things. But you first have to, like, sell your soul to the devil. And you do that by saying things of disbelief, even sacrificing children. This is not just fantasy, right? This is real stuff. When you hear about kids being kidnapped, when you hear in Nigeria and places in Africa, and it's not just in Africa, it's right here in UK, and it's not like, don't think it's just, you know, restricted to, you know, black people and voodoo. No, this stuff takes place, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they will sacrifice children, they will desecrate the Bible. Obviously, in Islamic countries, they will desecrate the Quran, right? And this is what they do in order to get the shayateen and the jinn to work with them and cooperate with them.
One more question on the Harry Potter before I go to the next. Do you think this can be some, is this sometimes a deliberate attempt? Can we take it? Is that, or is it a far stretch that these shows like Harry Potter, books like Harry Potter, is like a G-rated version or a stepping stone for people now to get into possibly even a higher level, you know, on the topic of magic, possibly?
Yeah, I think it's all, to be honest, Eddie, this is a very, there's some research, more research I have to do on this. But I think that when you link this to the whole issue of this movement of the Illuminati, now, you know, there is some evidence that some guys started this conspiracy theory about the Illuminati ruling the world as a type of joke, as a type of, you know, they literally chose it. There was this Bavarian group called the Illuminati that actually existed, right? And they started publishing stuff, you know, the Illuminati, and they did this just to show how conspiracy theories were so stupid and just to prove that it's just a load of nonsense. And it was almost like sarcasm, right? And that, because these guys believed, I don't remember their names, I was watching a documentary about it, and these guys basically believe that conspiracy theories were a means of control that the elite used, right, in order to control people, right? And only really stupid people would believe this stuff, because when you believe in conspiracy theories, you're disempowered, right? You think, oh, the whole world is controlled by this cabal, right? We'll never be able to overcome them. They control every aspect of your life, and you become hopeless, right? Obviously, unless you have rooting in Tawheed, you're never hopeless, and you know but above every power is the power of Allah. But it could quite be, I think the thing is, the funny thing is that people began to take it seriously, and not only did they take it seriously, it is quite possible that some people actually then started reviving it. And because they dabble in magic and witchcraft and all of these things, and because, I mean, the Illuminati were originally a rationalist movement. They were nothing to do with the occult at all, right? The Illuminati originally were all to do with enlightenment and the use of reason and a rationalist movement. That's what they were all about, right? But it could be well that these guys have actually sort of taken it and now adopted it to this whole magical thing. So I definitely think there's some stuff going on, right? There is no doubt. And a lot of this new age stuff, a lot of this stuff where these people are, and this is like some of the people amongst the elite believe this, that literally they have this idea that you are God. Everyone is God. You can become God. You can become a deity. You can, like, this is the, you have to understand the underlying philosophy of most magic. And this is Hinduism as well. And Hinduism is full of magic, right? It's widely practiced. So this is the belief that the universe is God and God is the universe. So this is the opposite of Tawheed. Tawheed teaches that the creator is distinct from the universe. He is not part of it. He is not contained within it. He is the creator of it. And the creator and the creation are two different things. But this whole Hindu-based, magic-based philosophy has the opposite idea. It says the universe is God, right? And therefore you are part of God. Everything is part of God. And they believe that if you develop enough spiritual powers and you learn how to channel all of these energies, you can control the universe. In other words, you can control God, right? And you can bring enough power within yourself to become a sort of divine being. And I'm sure you can see, Eddie, how that leads to the Dajjal, right? Because the Dajjal is going to claim some sort of divinity for himself, and he is going to have these sort of supernatural powers to do incredible things, right? But this only happens through kufr. So one of the things that the, you know, a Dajjal will do is he will go to a man, he will say to him, believe in me. The man will say, no, I won't believe in you. He said, what if I bring your brother and your father back to life? And if, what if I bring your camels back to life? Because he's a Bedouin. He says, if you do that, I'll believe in you. I'll believe you're the Rabb. So what he will do is get three shayateen to take the form, some devils, to take the form of his brother and to take the form of his father and to take the form of his camels. And this is how the man will be deceived, right? So it is clear that a Dajjal is using magic and the jinn and these type of things to deceive people. And that's the thing about magic, Eddie. Magic is deception. Magic is all lies. That's the whole basis of it. Whether it's actually trick magic tricks, the whole point is deception, right? But even black magic is deception. Because in black magic, what you're doing is you're using the shayateen and the jinn in order to make people think that you have divine powers, right? That's the thing. So you don't tell people, hey guys, I'm working with Shaitan over here and this jinn over here, he's giving me all of this information, right? And he's doing all of these things. No, the whole point is to make people think that you have the power, right? And that you are some sort of divine, powerful being, right? And this is all to fool people into this idea that divinity is within you. And, you know, somehow the universe is the divine, and by channeling these energies, and it's all just a big deception of Shaitan.
In your studies of some of these books on magic, did you ever come across the founder of the Church of Satan's materials, Anton LaVey?
Anton LaVey was an American occultist and was labeled by many as the father of Satanism. He was the founder of the Church of Satan and the religion of LaVey and Satanism. He authored several books, including The Satanic Bible, The Satanic Rituals, and The Satanic Witch. Here you can see him do a satanic hand sign. Does it look familiar to you? This hand sign is very prevalent in the music industry. This is not just a mere coincidence, the devil is hiding in plain sight.
Who wrote The Satanic Bible? And he uses many of these symbolic satanic symbolism that people connect, and they see a lot of these rap artists and many of these musicians using these things from people like his books and, you know, the pentagram. Have you come across any of these things? And what's your thoughts on that?
No. To be honest, Eddie, I haven't. I don't know that guy particularly. But I'm familiar with, you know, the writings and the teachings of Aleister Crowley, right?
This is Aleister Crowley, dressed as an Egyptian pharaoh. He is considered as the most notorious satanic magician of the 20th century. He identifies himself as the prophet entrusted with guiding humanity into the age of Horus in the early 20th century. Horus is yet again an Egyptian god. Here you see rap artist Jay-Z wearing a quote, "Do what thou wilt," which comes from the philosophy of dilemma, which was developed by Aleister Crowley.
He was, right, I think he lived, you know, maybe like 120 years ago or something. I'm not really sure, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, he claimed actually to be the Antichrist, right, at one time, right? Wow. He actually claimed it, right? And, you know, he was, you know, really responsible for reviving in the UK, especially, that's where he was based. You know, the whole issue of the occult and, you know, that type of stuff. So he was really into this and he was really trying to revive it. And you'd be very, very surprised, bro, how influential some of these groups are, right? You have another group called the Rosicrucians, right? I met some guy and had conversations with him. They're slightly different. They're more like, so these guys, again, it's very interesting. There's all these different types of groups, right? So some believe that there is a primal religion, and in fact, in some ways, you know, some of their belief systems are actually quite close to Islamic belief systems, right? But they sort of believe in a sort of hidden religion and hidden messages and a sort of elite, right? Like, this has even happened within Islam under some extreme type of Sufi sects. For example, the Batiniyya in Islamic history. The Batiniyya means, like, Batil means hidden, right? So again, these guys that believe that there was some sort of deep spiritual knowledge that the Prophet Muhammad taught to only certain people, right? And these certain people are privy to this deep spiritual knowledge that the masses do not know, right? Mm-hmm. I think this is more like some type of superiority complex, right? And they will use basic ideas that exist within religions, right? And they will just use them, right? In order to promote their ideas, right? So, but you know, you find a lot of these people, Eddie, right? Actually, some of them are really genuinely, you know, spiritual people, right? In the sense that I believe some of them are really looking for God, mm-hmm. right? They actually are. And I'm just saying that from my own experience, right? I didn't go into this stuff because I, you know, had some, like, you know, desire to control people and, you know what, it wasn't. I was looking through this stuff because I knew there was more to reality than what I was just being told, that we're just here to eat and drink and, you know, consume and whatever. Mm-hmm. So in my search, I went through all of these things, right? And, you know, some of them have some sort of basis, but unfortunately what I think is the reality of it has been twisted and turned and, you know, manipulated in a wrong way, you know.
How do you explain when you see people like, you know, you link Aleister Crowley and then he has his book, which people like Eminem and others, you know, they go and do some of the things that are in his book, that connection to the unseen world of the jinn, and then famous people like Bob Dylan. Have you heard of him? He was a famous musician.
Of course, I didn't know he was into that stuff.
Yeah, there's a quote of him on a 60-minute interview. He talks about how he talks about the magic, and it's a different kind of magic that he was involved in, and how the bargain that he made with the chief commander. And then when he was asked which chief commander, he said of this world and the next. He's talking about, like, it's almost like he's talking about Iblis, you know?
You ever look at music that you've written and look back at it and say, whoa, that surprised me?
I don't know how I got to write those songs. Well, those early songs were, like, almost magically written. There's a magic to that. And it's not Siegfried and Roy kind of magic, you know? It's a different kind of a penetrating magic.
Why do you still do it? Why are you still out here?
Well, it goes back to the destiny thing. I mean, I made a bargain with it, you know, a long time ago, and I'm holding up my end.
What was your bargain?
To get where I am now.
Should I ask who you made the bargain with?
with the chief commander.
On this earth?
And this earth and then in a world we can't see. World we can't see.
They talk about the things like Beyonce, for instance, like there's another name, Sasha, that when she's on stage, she's overtaken by these forces and they take over her.
I cannot do when I'm in rehearsal. I mean, I can try, but then it just doesn't happen. I can sing notes and sing strong and do all these things that, when I'm just by myself, I can't do. And I remember right before I performed, I raised my hands up, and it was kind of the first time I felt something else come into me. And I knew that was gonna be my coming out night for the BET Award.
You know the word genius?
Uh-huh.
Right? You know the word genius, you know what it comes from? From jinn.
From jinn, wow.
Genie.
Right? Genie,
it's actually
yeah.
In Greek. It's actually in ancient Greek as well, right?
Uh-huh.
And so it's because this is what people used to think, right? People used to believe that people who were geniuses, right, were like possessed, or they had some, not possessed exactly, right? But they were in cahoots with spirits. And these spirits were able to impart them with certain types of knowledge. So what we find is in the Quran. Allah talks about this in the Quran, that they you know, that the Jewish people who practice magic, obviously not all the Jewish people, but some of them who practice magic and then wrote the Kabbalah, right? And, you know, practice this type of stuff. They claim that their knowledge, right, came from the angels, you know, came from Suleiman, right? That's what they claimed. Because obviously, as we know, that Allah actually did give Suleiman command over the jinn, right? So this is what they use as a justification for it. So they claim that this knowledge of how to control the jinn and the spirits was something that had come from Solomon, from Suleiman, right? But as we know from our position, no, that's not what the Quran says. That's not what God tells us. God says that this was unique to Suleiman. It wasn't something that was given to anyone else. In fact, what they practiced was magic, which they learned from Harut and Marut. Now, Harut and Marut were actually two angels. And they came down to the people in the time of the Babylonian times. But they would teach people who asked and wanted it the understanding of magic. Now, why? Allah knows best. Maybe the reason why, because, you know, if you know the details of something, you know how to protect yourself from it. But like everything, Eddie, right? It's a fitna, right? It's a test. If you have that knowledge, like if I study the knowledge of, for example, as people do today, neuro-linguistic programming, right? Neuro-linguistic programming is actually a system of manipulating people's minds, right? And it's a way of manipulating their thoughts. Now, you could use that in a very positive way. You could use that for healing. You could use that for benefiting people. But you could also use that to control people for nefarious purposes, right? The same thing with magic, right? You can use that knowledge of magic to protect people from it, right? Or, unfortunately, you could take that and use that. But Harut and Marut would warn everyone, if you use this magic, that's it. You're finished. You're going to hell forever, right? Because there is, you know, the magicians will never be successful unless they repent, like the magicians from the time of Fir'aun, right? And you can see magic is real and magic is powerful, bro. We should not doubt the power and the reality of magic. You just need to see the story of Fir'aun, that the magicians in the time of Egypt, right? That even they were to Musa, they made their staves appear as if they were snakes. And even it made Musa nervous, right? Even Musa, when he saw it, he got nervous. So this, they have real abilities to deceive people and trick people. We shouldn't underestimate, you know, how powerful it is. But, you know, obviously, above all of that is the power of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and of the creator of God. And, you know, if we follow God's way and we follow his commands, and, you know, we recite certain verses of the Quran, then, you know, these are an amazing protection against all types of magic and trickery like that.
That's what I was going to get into next, after a couple more questions of how could we be protected, you know, to take this really serious. You have some people who have ambivalent feelings towards this. Some just rebuff it off the bat. But how much do you think, because you've studied psychology also, intensely, you, along with reading the books of magic, and now this, a lot of it before Islam and even in Islam now, you're, you know, just always broadening your horizons, studying, learning. How much do you think is there a connection with a lot of times many of the mental health issues and other, you know, psychological issues that people are having, and they kind of don't go down this road? Or some even, you know, in every situation, people go to extremes and they just say, okay, this is what it is. You know, they don't take, you know, the other means, medical means that we have. But how much do you think can, in your experience, can there be a link between what we're talking about? Yep. You know, the sihr, the evil eye, these things, yep. And not just keep having a balance between it.
I think that, you know, Eddie, I haven't really, you know, I need to spend a lot more time thinking about this and trying to unpackage it, right? There are things that I've thought about, but, you know, I haven't put the time and the energy and the research into it. But, you know, my initial sort of thoughts about it seem to indicate to me that from what we know of the jinn and the Shayateen, and the, you know, because basically they don't have any control over us except what we give to them. This is very important, right? So like even this issue of jinn possession, right? Do I believe the jinn can possess you? I do believe they can possess you. However, right, that it just can't happen just like that, right? The jinn can only possess you if you create the circumstances in your life that makes that possible, right? It's not, I don't believe it's easy for jinn to possess you. It's only easy when you adopt a particular lifestyle that makes it easy. So I would compare it to, for example, everyone is a castle. You're like, it's, imagine like you have a castle, right? Yeah. Okay. If you maintain the walls and keep the walls strong, right, and keep the gate strong, and you man those walls, right, with the right troops, yeah, and you have the right stuff ready to repel the attackers, like almost no one is going to be able to get into that castle, right? But if you leave the gate wide open and you don't repair the walls, right, and you leave, you know, the whole thing is in a state of disrepair, it's going to be very easy for someone to take your castle. And it's the same thing with the Shayateen and the jinn, right? So it's still, it's like, but it's down to you. That's your fault. That's your responsibility. You've been given all the tools to protect yourself, but you didn't do that, right? Right. In fact, you undermined your own castle, right? You know, you took your soldiers off the wall, and what did you do? You had a disco with them, right? And got drunk and took drugs, and you know, like, so all of those things, you dropped it. So yeah, then you are going to be opened. The other thing is the way the Shayateen attack us is through suggestion, right? So it seems to me that it is psychology. That's what is going on, right? And this is what Shaitan, when Shaitan saw Adam, right? And although this is not in the Quran, and I'm not sure it's a hadith either, but you will find it in some books of tafsir. That, you know, Shaitan was walking around Adam and he saw that Adam was hollow, right? Because Allah had made him out of clay, and you know, Allah was leaving Adam to dry, and he saw that he was hollow. So he knew that the nature of Adam was that he was going to be, you know, he was going to be easy to influence his desires because of that hollowness, that emptiness, right? Okay, so this is why they say about the heart is a vessel that has to be filled, right? If we don't fill that heart with the remembrance of Allah, we will try to fill it with something else. Something else that we think is going to give us that peace and happiness that we're looking for, right? So this is where Shaitan comes in. Shaitan is going to try and get us to fill our hearts with anything except the remembrance of Allah, right? And so I think that's what it is. I suspect that Shaitan is a bit of a master psychologist. And you look at the way that he tricked Adam and Hawa, right? He used psychology. He understood their nature and he manipulated. He didn't force them to do anything. What did he do, bro? He just whispered. He just whispered to them, right? But if you look at what he said, he was playing, you know, he was very clever, right? People don't even understand that Shaitan was actually appealing to Adam's religious nature. Think about it, right? Because he said that Allah wants you to stop, Allah wants to stop you being like angels. So what is that about? Like, why would Shaitan make that an issue? Why would Shaitan use that to tempt Adam, right? So as some scholars pointed out, they said it's because Adam looked at the angels as something amazing. They are always remembering God. They're always making dhikr. They're always praising God, remembering God. Whereas Adam, what's Adam doing? Adam's in the garden, eating, drinking, enjoying himself, right? Just chilling, right? You understand? So when Shaitan is saying, oh, God wants you to stop you being like angels, he was using Adam's desire to get close to God to take him away from God. He was using the desire of Adam to get close to God to take him away from God. And this is very, very deep, Eddie. right? It's very deep and very important. Even for Muslims, we have to be so careful.
Do you have experience at all, or have you seen cases, and how would you compare the two, where you have obviously one aspect of black magic and the jinn possession you cover? What about sihr, where you have some unexplainable things between husband and wife, where all of a sudden, you know, their relationship went from good to just explosive and nothing's working, marriage counseling, all that stuff, or brother and brother, sister and sister? You know, how does the aspect of sihr, you know, play? And do you have any experience with this?
I don't deal with it, bro, on purpose, right? I'm sure it's real. I'm sure it exists. But like I said, sihr only really comes into play when there are already underlying, you know, issues, right? So the sihr is only going to be taking hold when you've already weakened the fortress.
Examples, adhkar. No Muslim should go without morning adhkar, you know, and the night adhkar. Let's talk about how do you strengthen your fortress.
Sure, the basic thing is constant dhikr, constantly. Like, yeah, the more you, yeah, if you are literally making dhikr constantly, it is like you have built the fortress, right? You are in an almost, you could say, impregnable fortress, right? So that could be obviously adhkar, making dua, reading Quran, making sure you are in a state of wudu, constantly saying your prayers. The reason why I don't deal with anything to do with sihr, there's two reasons, yeah? Number one, the moment you step into that field, and by the way, like it is the, I think Ibn Taymiyyah, one a great scholar, he said is the greatest jihad is the jihad against shaitan, right? Like, so when you actually get into this arena of combating shaitan, right? It is just like it is the greatest struggle that you can have, right? In terms of like how noble it is, how great it is, because he's the biggest tyrant, right? You know, but however, it can come at a very high cost to you and your family, right? So when you go down that path of making ruqya and dealing with these issues, then that's it. Shaitan is sending his soldiers to attack you and your family, right? So your home, like literally, which is not a bad thing, right? But your home, you have to be reading Quran all the time. Everyone has to be praying 5 times a day. You can't have anything. Your food has to be halal. Your income has to be halal, right? God, your family and yourself constantly, like you said, du'as in the morning and the evening, you can't slip up, because the moment you slip up, that's a way, right? So it's literally like the moment you do that, it's like shaitan is going to be laying siege to you and your family, right?
Subhanallah.
And that is a hard path to follow, but, right?
But do you see that also in your life, in other du'a life? Do you see that? Because now you shaitan laying siege to someone doing ruqya. What about others who are calling to the way of Allah, you know, and getting in the way of shaitan?
Well, I think obviously, bro, I think there's sort of general and specific, right? Because when you're dealing with the ruqya, it's almost like that's the front line of the battle, right? In the sense that you're like fighting, is more like hand-to-hand combat.
Wow.
Whereas, yeah, like it's like you're grappling there, bro. It's like the hand-to-hand combat. That's the difference between me saying to people, right, like I say, hey guys, you know, you should study jiu-jitsu. You know, it's really good. It'll help you, you know. Do you understand? And then there's you actually teaching people, right, how to do it, right? So which one is the real, more of a real actual present and immediate threat, right? Like I can say whatever I like, right?
I understand.
The one who's, yeah, you get it, bro. Yeah. So, but the thing you hear is, bro, is that listen, right? The other reason I don't deal with it directly is a bit like this, right? You may also, and I'll give you an example of jiu-jitsu, right? In order to practice martial arts, right, and especially jiu-jitsu, for example, I've never practiced it myself, but I have a bit of an idea, right? You know, you need to maintain a certain level of fitness. Yeah, okay, you don't need to be the super fitness guy. But look, if someone is just like eating 20 burgers a day and stuffing his face with cakes and chocolate, you can teach him every move you like, right? But he's going to be out of breath when he lifts one leg, right? Do you get what I'm saying, right? There's just no point. In fact, if you teach him, you may actually cause the guy more harm, right, than you do good. So, you know, you say, listen, dude, you know, lose a bit of weight, shape up a bit, you know, whatever, or at least, you know, you're going to come regularly, right, and dedicate yourself to that and show that, you know, you're going to make some changes, then I can teach you. It's the same thing here, right? I will not help people who don't help themselves. If someone comes to me and says, oh, I've got gin, I say, do you pray 5 times a day? No. I said, I can't help you. I cannot help you. There's nothing I can do for you. Because even if I get all those jinn and the shayateen out, he's going to bring back 20, 30 more if you're not praying 5 times a day, right? Is your money halal or is it all from riba and haram and alcohol? Well, if it's from haram things, it doesn't matter what I do. Yeah, I can get rid of those shayateen. They're just going to come back more of them next time. Yeah. So this is the thing, like most people who have these problems, bro, are people, they don't pray 5 times a day, they don't do their fara'id, they're involved in haram, their food is haram, their drink is haram, their money is haram, their life is haram. Well, of course they're going to be open to being attacked by shaitan.
I had
I'm laying the smack down on everyone, bro. It's not that I don't care. I do care, but I'm not going to waste my time. You know what I mean, bro?
Yeah. Do you think that every community should have a trustworthy and experienced Raqi, someone in their community?
Definitely. And there's, you know, like the few Raqis that I know, bro, they're saying it's like, bro, it's like, it's a bit like the Mongols, I think. You know, like when the Mongols attacked the Muslim world, like no one could stop them. They were just everywhere. Like, you know, it's like that with the Shiateen. Like so many people are suffering. So many people are being attacked. Like there is so much going on. And it's like the crazy thing is, bro, like, you know, things like Harry Potter are normalizing it, right? They're just like ordinary people start to think that magic is cool, magic is fun. It's not fun and cool. It's it's so dangerous.
Yeah.
It is so dangerous. It will mess you up psychologically. It will do so much damage. It's just, it's really madness, right?
You have some Muslims actually who indulge sometimes in this magic. Yeah. You know, if they want to get someone to love someone or to marry someone, what do you say about that?
Well, you know, it's, you know, it is disbelief. A person who practices it, or even a person who goes and asks someone to do magic for them, this takes you out of Islam. You know, it's what they call kufr. Kufr means disbelief. Yeah, it is an action of disbelief. It is an action of disbelief, right? And if you die not repenting from that, you will go to hell forever and you will never come out.
You mentioned, like, in speaking to some of these Raqis, I spoke to one also, you know, people who you would consider trustworthy, who do this for pretty much, you know, they helped a lot of people. One of them, when I asked how many, or he actually told me, he said he believes that 80% of people are afflicted by a lot of this stuff. You know what I mean? And he mentioned that every community should have. Yeah. So in you mentioned you similar that it's kind of like the Mongols. So it should motivate us more to do what you're saying, to be more in the deen, to never leave your house, you know, without the dua, the adhkar, you know, even in the morning. Yep. I mean, to take this more serious. Yep.
Absolutely, bro. Absolutely. I mean, look, for someone who's a Raqi, it's a little bit like, you know, when it's your profession, you see it a lot.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Like, you know, when you buy a new car and you drive that car, right, then suddenly you start seeing that car everywhere as before you didn't even notice it. Yeah, it's a little bit like that. You know, when it's your job to do Ruqya, you think the whole world is possessed, right? Because that's all you see day in, day out, right? Yeah. So I suspect it's not as bad as maybe what he said, but it is really bad, right? I won't deny that it is really like it's the problem is so big that we don't have enough people who are really well trained to deal with it. And it, by the way, it takes training. And these days, I think, to be honest, like in order to be a Raqi, I do think that you should have qualifications in psychology and mental health as well, right? Because the people I know who are very, you know, I would say reasonably learned, maybe not scholars, but good students of knowledge, right, who have also studied in-depth psychology, they will say that in their opinion, probably like 90% of the things that people think are jinn possession are not. They're actually just psychological problems. However, like I said, I think the jinn use psychology. That's their method of manipulation. So there may be, you know, a connection between the two. But like this brother, you know, one of the brothers, and there's a few of them, they say that, look, most of these issues are mental health issues. But because the Muslim community are very ignorant about mental health issues, right? You know, and they just like to say any problem that someone has, you know, even if like their daughter doesn't want to get married to their cousin back home. Right? Oh, she's possessed by a jinn. That's how crazy it is. You understand? Like, there's not even mental health issues, right? She's probably quite sensible. But, you know, it's just ridiculous. Like, you know, yeah.
Have you ever accompanied one of these Rakis? Have you ever witnessed something? Do you have any?
I've been involved in the Rakia myself.
You have? Right? Can you share with us? Can you share with us a jinn story or something? People love these.
I did Rukia with a lot of other people. Like, there was a big group of us, and this is soon after I'd become Muslim, on a brother who basically, unfortunately, we found out that he had gone into a pub to go to the toilet, right? He was Muslim, right? And he wasn't drinking or anything. He'd just gone into the pub, but because he hadn't made the du'as and so on and so forth, he went into the pub, he urinated against the urinal, and I think he got possessed. They found out in the end he got possessed by 20 female prostitute jinn, right? And this guy, they were driving down the motorway, like at 70 miles an hour, right? They started playing Quran in the car. The guy opened the door without even whatever and literally just jumped out. I mean, they grabbed him. Right. But he had opened the door and he was literally on his way to jump out. Right. Fortunately, they grabbed him. So, we were pinning this guy down. Everyone was reciting the Quran. Right. But the guy was saying, it's me, you know, like he was just like fighting and making these horrific noises. Yeah. It was, you know, I won't say I'm not, honestly. I really am not scared of the jinn at all. It doesn't frighten me. It doesn't really scare me that much. I always tell people they're more scared of you than you are of them, right? I mean, it's one of those things. When you're scared of them, that's one of the ways you hand over some sort of control to them, right? So I don't, like, in a way, we shouldn't, like, telling jinn stories to get people frightened is just helping shaitan, right? It's actually helping them. So this, all these horror stories and this type of stuff that creep you out, this is all part of his plan, right? He wants people to be afraid of him and his followers. But in reality, they have no power. Like I said, unless you give them the power, they don't have it, right? So we don't want to really create sort of fear and sort of, you know, that type of thing. No one should really be afraid of jinn. Like, you have to realize the jinn fled to the remote places, right? Because they're afraid of human beings, right? Originally, this is what happened. The jinn would inhabit the desert regions, the deserted buildings, because they run away from people. But then what would happen is that, you know, the Arabs, when they're traveling through the desert regions, they would call out, oh, chief of... Now, because it was their habit that when they passed through the land of a particular chief, they would visit that chief and get permission to pass through his land. Then they would start doing this with the jinn and say, oh, chief of the jinn, you know, we're seeking your permission to pass through your land. And this started to make the jinn bold, right? This started to make them, you know, get some courage, because before they were terrified of humans, right? So we have to understand that, and apart from anything else, we have, you know, these, I don't know, like one, I remember one of my teachers, I don't know if he was a teacher exactly, but he was more like, you know, someone I knew. He said, you know, the Surat al-Ikhlas and, you know, the last three verses, surahs of the Quran, Ikhlas, An-Nas, and Falaq, he said it's like a nuclear bomb against shaitan and the jinn, right? And actually, you know, when I first became Muslim, bro, I was so bothered by shaitan. Like, really, bro, it was horrific. Like, I couldn't concentrate on my prayer. I would literally, bro, I would make sajda and like these images of Ganesh, and I didn't even like, you know, like follow him. The images of Ganesh would come in my head, and like this voice would be saying, stop worshiping idols, right? Stop worshiping, like this is just to disrupt my prayer, right? It was so hard, bro. I couldn't concentrate. And then I learned these three surahs, right? In fact, funnily enough, I only even learned them in English. I didn't even learn them in Arabic. I just was reading the translation of the Quran and came across them in English because I was saying, you know, I was just making dua, Allah help me. Even in English, like 90% of that stuff stopped, you know. So it's just also knowing the right things to recite. You know, those, the three quls, blow into your hands, spit lightly like that, recite the three quls. You know, recite it three times, wipe it over yourself three times, wipe it over yourself, like each one. Qul huwallahu ahad, qul a'udhu birabbin nas, qul a'udhu birabbil falaq, qul a'udhu birabbil falaq, qul a'udhu birabbin nas. Do one each and then wipe it. Again, you do it each one, then wipe it. Do that before you go to bed, right? Recite Ayatul Kursi after every fard prayer. Try to be in wudu, right? In a state of tahara as much as you can. Right, if for example you have intimate relationships with your wife, try to make sure you take ghusl afterwards before you sleep, or at least make tayammum, you know, on the wall or something like that, right? So it's just these things, you know, make the dua when you go in and out of the toilet, right? It's things like, and don't urinate in places like where the jinn may be. So that there's some things that are just so well known. Anyone who studies this matter, you will find that all the scholars are saying the same thing, that certain mistakes that people make a lot that opens them up to being attacked by the jinn. Because there's sort of protocols that exist, right? There's sort of like, I guess it's a bit like traffic lights and, you know, zebra crossings, right? That type of stuff. Just as we have protocols, right? Those protocols exist in the world of the shayateen and the jinn. And this is, by the way, a bit of the way that magic works, right? They have these protocols. But even for us, if we don't see, this is the problem. If you don't understand this area of jinn and shayateen, you will cross the line, right? And when you cross the line, it opens the doors for you to be attacked by the jinn, right? So when you don't make the dua before you relieve yourself, that you verbalizing that dua, أعوذ بك من الخبث والخبائث. You saying it, just saying it, the jinn now know you're coming and they will get out of the way. But if you just go and urinate, you may urinate on the jinn and they will attack you, and it will be their right to attack you. You won't be protected because you abuse them. You transgress, you oppress them. Do you understand? So it's so important to know this stuff. This is why ignorance, subhanAllah, of the deen is so dangerous, bro.
Got to be grounded in the deen. And let's close up with this. What do you say for our agnostic atheist friends when they hear this? They say, oh, well, that's the reason I don't follow any religion. But at the same time, you know, these are the people who are really the most into aliens and UFOs and stuff like that.
I mean, and maybe, you know, that there is a connection between aliens and UFOs and jinn. You know, maybe there is, because, you know, we know that jinn have the ability to, you know, I mean, maybe we're talking about the same thing. You know, maybe, yeah, I mean, it's just a different language. We call it jinn, right? But maybe the jinn and aliens are the same thing, right? But, you know, just to say that, like, first of all, right, like, you look throughout every culture, you look through history, you look through every single culture historically, right? Even until today, despite all the science, people universally have experienced these creatures and believe in them. They may call them different. They may call them ghosts or spirits or jinn or lots of different things. They may even call them gods, right? Because they've taken them as gods. But in fact, they're just the jinn, right? Which these people have begun to worship. But you will find that they, you know, recognize they have these powers, they have these abilities, they can possess people, so on and so forth. Like, so many people have witnessed it. Extraordinary things happening that are superhuman feats. A human being cannot do those things. How do you explain it? How do you explain it? Have you seen that video of that woman that I think in Norway was running across the road, got hit by a truck and just got up and walked? And kept going, well, she wasn't on drugs, right? This is like, it doesn't matter if she's on drugs, right? And she was fine. Like, and so many people, countless numbers of people will tell you these stories. Like, are they all lying? and they all made it up everywhere on every culture throughout history. That is, you know what? That's unscientific. To deny it is itself unscientific, right? Because that's science. Science is built on observation, right? And this stuff has been observed, right? Okay, what's the explanation for it? Fair enough. You know, you can come up for an explanation, but, you know, from our perspective, it is these beings. Why in a universe that is so huge and so massive, right? Where you have stuff that we've only just discovered that the most of the universe is supposed to be, for example, dark matter. Are we saying it's not a possibility that there is not some other type of intelligent being that exists that is not, you know, carbon based, that is maybe based on something else? Why is that not a possibility? Right? Of course it's a possibility. It would be ridiculous to discount it. So, I mean, you know, like, I'm not going to convince you from that, a person from that, you know, but, you know, you surely it's not, you know, it's not worthy of a mind that is open to inquiry to consider these as possibilities, right? So, yeah, I don't think anyone should dismiss this outright. That is just not really, that's not really being open to possibilities, which everyone should be.
Great conversation as always. It's a pleasure talking with you. We can take away from this, if anything, strengthen your castle, your fortress with the deen. Get well grounded in the deen. Don't miss out on your ethqad, your salat 5 times a day, yep. Your tawheed, and extra bonuses. Try to stay under wudu as much as possible. And yes. Anything else you want to add, Sheikh?
No, Habibi, that's it, man. It's so great to be on the Deen Show. I hope we can do this again. You know, I'm going to invite you onto some of my shows now, Eddie. You're going to have to accept, right?
Inshallah, do it.
Inshallah, bro, inshallah. And listen, Eddie, you got to start this Deen Show on Clubhouse, bro. I don't know if you've heard of Clubhouse.
Clubhouse, what's
that?
You
got to get it going there. Yeah, it's really kicking off, and it's amazing. You'll have some amazing conversations. I think you'd be great on there, bro.
Okay, Clubhouse.
Anyway, thanks for inviting me on, bro.
May God Almighty Allah preserve you, protect you. Jazakallah khair. Hope to see you again soon, inshallah.
Subscribe right now.